CliffCentral.com.
All right, CliffCentral.com on Monday, the 5th of October. Sorry about all that. We've had some internet issue. You may have been aware of that. So actually, I was joking with Leanne and Sia that we should have just put on this on-hold music they used to put on when you call for a number at Telkom. And then it'd go like this.
Your call is important to us. Please wait.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, just hearing that sensor shiver down my spine.
Yeah, I know. Oh. That's really nice. All right, so we're live, and I was just saying, you know, some inane, innocuous shit about how the first rains have cleared the pollen out of the air so that people who have hay fever don't have such a shit time. So I hope that's the case for you. All right, we are live. We've got things to talk about, places to go, people to see, all kinds of stuff happening. And Sia was saying October surprise. Well, it seems like our surprise is that this morning we have to put up with some internet issues. It's ironic, though, because we've got someone who can probably solve all these issues for us at 7:30. He is the CEO of a company called Catalytic. So we'll find out all about them. But I want you to meet the team there, too, because we're doing some work with them in any case. But I think if he was in charge of my home internet, I wouldn't ever have disconnections. So ironically, Yaku could probably solve all our problems later on.
There are those people in life that we wish we lived with.
I know.
So one of Yaku, maybe a personal stylist.
Yeah.
A doctor.
Right.
You know, would be really helpful.
It would be nice. There are lots of, you know, that's also where it's good to kind of imagine a world where you just had endless amounts of money because you would have someone to handle all of these different aspects of your life and you'd never have to think about them.
In the little village that I lived in, McGregor, at one point, we did a little tally and we realized that there was one of everything in the village in terms of careers. the only thing we weren't covered for was a doctor.
Well, that's kind of important.
Which is pretty important.
Yeah. I'd say.
You need that. Sure.
Just very important.
All right. Well, apologies for any technical issues, but we are operating from, you know, my house, Sia's house, Leanne's house, and we're trying out this new software as well, which I'm kind of half and half on at the moment. We were meant to try and give you the opportunity to watch us live this morning, but I don't think that's happened. So I'll have to figure it out. By tomorrow, we'll know the answers.
So we're all trying to make sense of this. Saturday Night Live came back over this weekend with their new season, and they tried to have an audience. And I don't know about you, but all of these things actually like count for something when, firstly, some of these late night show hosts come out and they start their show, and you can hear it's all pre-recorded clapping, or some of them who keep it real. And it's their crew who claps, but as well, they're working on skeleton crew. So you can hear it's just six people who are clapping as they walk out. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Not a good time for show hosts.
Some talk shows have virtual walls, and you can tell it's like 16 people on a Zoom call, and then this person is frozen in the background, and then this person is still clapping. And then the other person is laughing at a joke that happened.
They're doing that on Dr. Phil.
Oh, no. It's just.
Or maybe the presenter's so shit that actually there are lots of people, but they don't all want to clap. Oh, man.
I
don't know about you, but I've become really interested in these pictures that people are putting up on social media of all the different things that have been. You remember in the beginning of coronavirus, there were all those pictures of like abandoned cities where, you know, the streets were empty, squares were usually filled with people at the Vatican or in Japan or in New York. These places were suddenly empty of people. And you remember all those beautiful pictures that people were posting. Well, I saw one over the weekend and it got me thinking. It's like a whole bunch of airplanes just parked at an airport. And I know Leanne has got a story about this because apparently the airlines are putting all their aircraft in certain places. And when COVID was, when we had the proper shutdown, you know, at the beginning of beginning of April and all the airlines ground to a halt, I always wonder, where do these planes go? Because most of them are in the air at the time and there's not enough parking space for all of them.
Exactly. So a lot of them go to this one particular space in eastern Spain, called Teruel. and it's a late 30s airfield.
Yeah.
And the reason why they have it there is because there's a very dry climate, which is kind to metallic airframes. So many planes are there for short-term storage, biding their time while they change owners or they undergo maintenance.
Yeah.
But if their future is less clear, especially at the moment, they enter long-term storage. And then from there on, because these planes can't just sit there because they deteriorate. So sometimes a plane's limbo ends when it's taken apart and its body is pulled apart into spare, made into spare parts and recycled material. So this whole thing looks like a boneyard, and that's exactly what it's called. It's a boneyard. It's mm-hmm. wingtip to wingtip of all these unwanted planes sitting outdoors. And it kind of looks like a skeleton from the air.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's quite a depressing place. and apparently the last time something like this happened was during the SARS epidemic in 2003.
Yeah.
And what when coronavirus hit, the people who actually run this space said they started immediately working with the site and almost playing Tetris with the aircraft to free up a few more spaces.
Well, you know how they park those planes when they're not using them? They actually park them nose to nose in each other's wings. So if you can imagine a triangle going into a triangle facing the other way, that's kind of what they look like when they're all parked like that. And they take up this enormous space. You can see it on any of these satellite programs, you know, like Google Earth or whatever, and you can see this multitude of planes that are all parked in the middle of nowhere, kind of just waiting for something to to recommission them back into flight. Or, as Leanne says, they get broken down and the pieces get used for refurbishing other planes that are currently in use. But I'm pleased to see that local flights are starting to pick up again. It seems that they're filling up nicely. We're getting beyond 70 to 80 and even 90% capacity in some of these planes. Friends of mine who have been flying, someone I spoke to who flew from Cape Town over the weekend, said that actually the plane was completely full and it wasn't horrible to fly at all.
Hmm.
So that's good news.
It's really cool.
There's some drama around international flights. I won't speak on it because I haven't done my reading up on it yet. But international flights landing in Durban and some regulations, or it's not necessarily a strike, but I think it's a disagreement when it comes to regulation. I think this is the last thing we need right now.
No, please. I mean, we can't afford this stuff. But I saw that the airlines are also ditching the phrase ladies and gentlemen because they are starting to pick up gender neutral phrases instead, you know, because we don't want to upset the 0.08% or whatever it is of the population who are gender fluid or gender non-binary or whatever else they are. You know, you can't say, yeah, just because 99.9% of you are either men or women, yeah, we've got to be careful not to offend that 0.00002%. So what do they say now?
So it's Japan Airlines that's the latest one to abolish expressions that are based on two types of sex and use gender-friendly expressions like good morning and good evening.
Does this even warrant a statement?
Yeah, it's a big deal.
If that's what you want to do, okay, then do it and we move on.
It's a huge big deal because the airlines want to be seen to be doing and saying the right things.
It's a PR moment.
It's PR. It's performative. This is all about look at how open-minded we are. We're good people because we are addressing the gender fluid, gender non-binary, and non-male and non-female people on the flights. Is that great or what?
So Japan Airlines is the first Japanese airline to adopt this more inclusive approach.
Well, it's the first airline in general. Whoop-de-doo.
So other international airlines have already been doing this. Australia's Qantas was among the first when it launched Spirit of Inclusion Initiative in March 2018. So they also
Yeah, Shania Twain singing a theme song for that Spirit of Inclusion.
Yeah.
So apparently employees were also asked to refrain from gender-specific words, this is on Qantas, like honey, love, and guys. I mean, who's been calling, which air stewards have been calling people honey? And while the terms partner, spouse, and parents were preferred above the more exclusionary husband and wife and mum and dad.
You know, it's so funny. Like, here we've got airlines. No, none of these airlines, by the way, who they're suddenly talking about inclusion, but it's not like anyone's turned someone away because they were gender binary or whatever, or gender non-binary beforehand. No one said, oh, I'm sorry, you can't get on this plane because you say you're a man, but I say you look like a woman. No one said that, right? None of that's happened. So this is now about the greetings. These are the ever more incursions upon your and my ability to speak freely, to be able to say what's really on our minds, obviously to not go out of our way to offend people. But now we suddenly have to conform to the language you want us to use. And we can't even greet. If you're an air steward or a cabin stewardess or whatever they call them now, because you can't even use those terms. Well, they call them cabin crew, right?
Cabin crew.
Now you have to be on your toes the whole time in case you call a ma'am sir or sir ma'am. You know?
I worry mostly about DAC Airlines in Portugal.
They don't care.
Because they said, what'll happen to their phrase when you get onto the plane and they go, ladies and gentlemen, sorry about the delay. They won't be able to do that anymore. It's really sad. It's the end of an era.
And pardon me, I didn't know honey and what is the second phrase, love or sweetie?
Sweetie.
I didn't know that was gender specific. So who's a honey and who's a sweetie?
You know what we're getting to? We're getting to a stage where someone's going to have to fill in a form every time you meet them. You're going to have to carry around a card that says, my preferred pronouns are, and I'd like you to address me like this, and this is as if you're the most important person in the world. Like, we need a protocol card for you so we can introduce you properly to everyone else. Well, I'm sorry. That's just not going to happen in my world. I'll rather go to jail for calling you the wrong pronoun. Nonsense, right?
Oh, gosh.
Leanne, did you just pour some wine? Someone wants to know if you poured wine.
It was water, and I've made such a mess of it as well. It's all over my desk, all over my papers.
Yeah. Do you have the shakes this morning?
Yeah. No, it's these bottles that get condensation on them.
Oh, yeah. Someone says that, and you know, everybody's listening to every sound that comes out of us now, because we've actually probably in some ways got better sound than in the studio, because those microphones are very directional. But Carol says, who was flicking a lighter just now on the show? Is it our lovely Leanne smoking?
Oh, no, I wasn't doing that.
Okay, well, I didn't hear a lighter.
I'll do it now.
Oh. There we go. There's a lighter. That's what you were looking for. there are lots of messages pouring in now. Why would you rent out a luxury apartment if you're homeless? Where is the money for those LGBTQ activists, in inverted commas, coming from?
From their rich friends.
Yeah, or they're rich. Maybe they're not homeless. They're just looking for attention, which is still my...
Very sketchy.
No. Apparently, listen to this. You've got to Google someone called Anna Turaeva. She is a Russian champion weight lifter and was asked to prove her gender on a flight and found it highly offensive. Have a look at her pics and then let's hear what you have to say. All right, let me look her up. Anna Turaeva. Turaeva. Anna Turaeva. Okay, let's look at this. Have you already seen the pictures?
Yeah. So what was their issue?
Well, Anna Turaeva was asked to prove her gender on a flight. Now, I don't know how that happened, but this is according to a WhatsApp that we've just got on our WhatsApp line, 0797482090. It comes from Kala. He says, look at her. She's a Russian champion weight lifter and was asked to prove her gender on a flight and found it offensive. So I'm looking at the pictures now of Anna Turaeva. Sweet Jesus.
You see, I don't know what we're allowed to say and what we aren't. But
on this show, you can say whatever you want.
Okay, well, this person presents as a male.
Mm-hmm.
They're dressed as a male.
Right.
So it's a little confusing to looks like the man on the street or the woman on the street.
This person looks like, let me just try and put this, looks like a...
Let's say masculine-looking female athlete.
I don't even think they look female at all.
I don't think they look female at all.
No, they look like a Russian gangster with a bald head. There's no hair at all. There are tattoos all over the arms. You can't tell if there's a T-shirt on. You can't tell if there are breasts or not. It's very hard to tell. There are no female features on the face. So I don't know if this is a transgender person or if they are just saying that they're a woman. I'm not sure what the story here is. But then just a
step back. How do you get to a point where you even need to – why gender specific or necessary when you're going on to
Why do you have to prove your gender? Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know.
It's not as if like they're male and female lose on a plane.
It's very strange. It's very
odd. Sit wherever you want to sit.
I think the
biggest decoy here is that the person has a receding hairline, which you would normally associate with a male.
Well, here's the story.
The
42-year-old said she was humiliated when Uter staff members asked her intimate questions about her sexual preferences in front of other passengers. At the checkpoint, they refused to let me pass through, saying that it was written on my passport that I'm a woman, Turaeva wrote on Instagram. It was humiliating. Well, Jesus Christ. It was humiliating to be asked that. But really, if you call yourself a woman and you look like you do, honey. Honey, you see? I just did it.
Can't say honey.
I was reprimanded like a child in front of people in the queue. They wanted to know which role I play in life between the sheets. The whole queue was watching this anarchy, and I felt helpless.
Okay, well, yeah. No, that's not good.
I worked the other day. I'm going to say nothing.
Yeah. It's just such a strange story. Let's just leave it alone. I don't even know how to address this. But I mean, you don't need to humiliate someone. But when you get on a plane, they're allowed to check that you're A, on the right flight, that you are who you say you are for security reasons, right? And maybe they looked at this guy who presents as a guy and they said, well, it says here female. Maybe this isn't the person who said they were that person. Mm-hmm. I mean, from a security point of view, that could be, you know, you could be letting, Osama bin Laden on your flight.
Yeah, they didn't have to go as far as asking what happens between the sheets and things.
Yeah, that's mean. But at the same time, not everybody in life is friendly, especially not air stewards. Some of them can be really bitchy, so I wouldn't take it too personally. But there we go. Go and look up Anna Turaeva, and you'll see what we mean. It's very confusing.
You make up your own mind.
Yes, precisely.
Yeah.
Now, when we hear of people who do awesome work, I'm always keen to introduce them to you. And that is what I want to do this morning. I want you to meet Jaco Voigt. He is the part of the Catalytic team. He's actually the boss of the team there. He and his team have a passion to improve the personal connections between us over and above technology. And I was talking this morning when we had our technical issues at 7 o'clock, how I wish that Jaco was in charge of my technology at home, because then I wouldn't have any problems. But you know, technology's become such an underlying motivation for almost everything. And I know that that's the case for the guys at Catalytic too, both internally and externally. They're also behind a new podcast series, which is going to start soon on cliffcentral.com, which I think you're going to enjoy. And Jaco is here to just introduce us to this and tell us about it this morning. So, Jaco, first of all, good morning. Your timing is perfect. On a day I have internet issues and you're the connections man.
Morning. Luckily it's not our connections yet. So no. we'll have to make a plan to fix that.
No, it's definitely not yours. If it was yours, it would be working. But, you know, Jaco, like
we 100%.
We look around and everybody needs to have technological solutions to problems. And there are lots of people who say that they can fix those problems. But I know you and your team really believe in the human connection. Explain to me why that's important.
So, as we've had in some of our previous discussions, I think it's an illness in our industry that people tend to over-technify things. We like to sound like we're sending rockets to space, but fundamentally, the general expectation from our customers are that things should just work. It's like you saying this morning, you just want it to work. You don't need to know why or how it works. It must just work. Like we always say, our customers don't thank us because it's working. They expect it. So we have to focus on connecting humans. So there's on either side of a telephone call, there's two people that are fundamentally doing business. And that's the long and the short of it. You know, how we facilitate the technology or make that happen in the meantime is almost irrelevant to people. And I think in our industry specifically, a lot of people or a lot of service providers, if we want to call it that, miss that point. They forget that ultimately all we do is we facilitate people to be able to do business.
Yeah, I think that's so important. I mean, what you said just now really struck a chord with me because it happens on this show. So we've been doing shows every morning since lockdown started at the end of March. And I don't think we've missed a single one, but we've had one or two days when there've been technical problems. And guess what? You think I remember the days where everything was fine and we didn't have any technical issues and everybody was able to listen to us easy? Obviously not. But the moment anything goes wrong, I'm like, oh, bloody hell, this connection. And it must be like that for you guys, because you could provide 364 days of fantastic service. Everybody's happy. But then on day 365, someone has a bad experience and then suddenly it's all up, you know, it's all gone up in smoke. Everything's a disaster.
It's 100% that. But that actually feeds into our core philosophy that, you know, ultimately our customers, we have to be accessible to our customers. And what we typically say is when we engage our customers, it's a journey.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's probably the point that's very different between us and some of the other people that we come up against in the market is, a lot of our customers don't know that they, or it gets sold to them in such a way where they believe that because it's, for example, fiber, it's just going to be up for 366 days of the year. And it's not, you know, technology breaks. And for us to be responsible and build a long-term relationship with our customers, we actually have to tell them and say, listen, you must expect that it's going to break and we have to understand what the impact on your business is so that we can, cover that, with a backup link, for example, or backup technology or something like that. So it's part and parcel of being honest. And engaging customers and walking the journey with them and almost, you know, like you say, have skin in the game. You know? So we're always on the treadmill to make sure that we have as little of those days that, our customers can be upset with us.
So I'm going to ask you a business question because I think everybody in South Africa is curious about this. Jaco, what is the state of affairs in South African internet service providers? What is the state of affairs for infrastructure in this country? I mean, you might have to talk about some of your competitors here too, but I think it would be interesting to most of us because we don't see it from the bird's eye view that you have of, you know, we just either have an internet connection or we don't. It's working or it isn't. And I'm sure you have some insights here that might be really interesting to most of us.
So almost a side note, and you and I touched on it the other day when we saw each other. I think this work from home revolution or the new normal that everybody is speaking about is, I think that's undefined. And I think, my opinion is I think a lot of people are knee-jerking and most probably corporate South Africa doesn't have a clear-cut view of what it's going to look like in a years from now. A year's time from now, I think a lot of people, one of the things I constantly say is a lot of people will say, oh, I'm so much more productive now that I'm working at home and this and that. And my new phrase is don't confuse activity with productivity. So I think from that perspective, it's not defined.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of water that's going to run into the sea for us to know how this thing pans out. Because there's implications, you know, it's, we might say, well, we've got, fiber at home, for example, and that enables us to work and then into load shedding and there's 4 hours of productive downtime that we can't cater for. From an infrastructure perspective, it's been, so we focus on, obviously in a corporate space, the infrastructure in a corporate space is comparative to where it was 5 or 10 years ago has come around leaps and bounds. And typically it's become more affordable. The connectivity space has become commoditized. And that's interesting. You know, when you talk the business question, that's some of the interesting things that we see is, it's fiber has become so affordable that sometimes we walk into a customer and they've got a 500 meg link and they're super proud of it. And we go, but why do you have it? Maybe 100 meg is good enough. And it's like, oh yeah, but it was a good price. You know, it's almost like, you know, I bought the shoes because it was on sale. So the infrastructure is relatively good. And typically when we engage with our customers, we will have, let's say a cabled or a fiber type connection as a primary, engagement method, but we will always have some form of wireless or microwave alternative. So, you know, stuff break, people dig up roads, all that type of stuff. We had a scenario in Cape Town a couple of years ago when it was so dry there that people couldn't put fiber in the ground because the municipality was scared that you know, water pipes were going to break and it just couldn't happen. But in general, the fiber alternatives that's available to suppliers like us is generally good.
So tell me, Yaku, how did Catalytic
the Link Africa's, the DFA's.
How did Catalytic start? I mean, tell me about your business and who you guys are, who's on your team, etc.
So we were born out of a listed entity called Telemasters Holdings, which has been around for 21 odd years, supplying mostly voice services. Mm-hmm. And we launched or we hatched the Catalytic idea probably about 18 months ago. We launched it at the end of last year, and part of the reason that we came up with a brand and that we launched it into the market is we believe that the market is ready for something different from all of the usual suspects. And that's what the name says, is we want to be catalytic in our customers' lives and actually we actually want them to say, where were you before? You just improved our life so much. We almost want to spark that change. And that's why we went to market like that.
Well, I mean, the word the catalyst in chemistry, which is something I know a little bit about, in chemistry, a catalyst is something that helps the reaction happen. It makes the reaction start. And I think that's amazing.
That's because exactly it.
I like the name. So how do you guys do things differently?
So first of all, I mean, like we say, we have to be accessible to our customers. So what you see in some of our larger competitors, it's layered and very hierarchical. So if a customer is upset, there's no way that you're gonna get to voice your opinion to the CEO of the company. Mm-hmm. In our world, I love engaging with customers. I love hearing from customers. So if a customer has a complaint or a requirement or something like that, and it's not about me, but I'm just making a point of how accessible everybody in the team is. We team focused. So what we have is we have multidisciplinary teams. So in a team, we'll have sales, project support, technical, all of those guys. And there's a real ownership. So within each team, where we look after our customers and we honor and we love our customers. So I think that's one of the differences. And then we've got skin in the game. The way in which we engage with our customers at a commercial level, if we don't perform for our customers, they simply just don't pay us. So we have to make stuff work for them. We don't just have this unilateral engagement where we say, okay, right, you bought stuff from me, it's your problem now, I don't have to worry about it.
So Yaku, what about you? What's your story and where did you get into this world of kind of internet service providers and voice solutions and Catalytic? How did it all start with you?
Oh my word, you're gonna make me feel old now. So
no, go on, I'm old. We can share this.
So I started many years ago. I must think back now, probably something like 1997 at a company called DataPro. Mm-hmm. I came fresh out of Bloemfontein, where I studied psychology, knowing nothing about the internet and technology and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I started at a company called DataPro, and we were doing dial-up email for business, where people had a US Robotics 336 modem and they were dialing up and downloading.
They were
dialing up and downloading 50 people's, 50 people's mail, and we had to let our customers know, please don't send 1 meg attachment. It's too big. You're breaking your connection. So
it sounds like there were 8 people necessary just to go outside, and I'm just picturing some huge thing that need to be like spun into operating. And this was what? How many years ago?
Don't say it like that. Let's just go with the year 1997.
God bless what we have now. Goodness.
And then the evolution of that is at that stage, from a regulatory perspective, only Telkom was allowed to provide connectivity.
Yeah.
And our first lease line was a 64 kilobits per second link that we delivered to a customer.
Wow.
And we probably planned 2 weeks to implement it and execute. It was like a major thing. And I mean, now we bang them out, 20-50 a week, so it's come quite a long way.
Sure.
That is amazing.
When you think about Windows 95 and you're installing them with floppy disk or tippy disk. So it's many, many years ago.
Well, I mean, you think about now, we send each other attachments on WhatsApp that are megs and megs big, and they get delivered, and we don't even think twice about it. And those days, you would pay a fortune to have sent a file that big. You've just reminded me of how far we've come in like 20 years. It's absolutely incredible. All right, so were you always?
It's exactly that. So people, when they used to dial up, you had to pay for the internet service, and as well, you had to pay Telkom on a per minute basis for however long you were staying connected. So it was. So email for a company of 20 or 30 people could easily cost 30,000 rand a month because the bulk of it was going to Telkom.
My God. No, it's quite extraordinary.
I'd love to go back to that time and explain like Snapchat to someone like that and go, so all of the megs used just to send a simple email.
Yeah.
In 20 odd years time, people will be using all of those megs to put dog ears and dog noses on their faces.
Right. I'm undergoing exactly the kind of problems that we were just joking about. This is hardly funny at all. I'm trying to figure out what the hell's happening with my internet.
So technology has become a productivity enabler. If we had lockdown 20 years ago, if what we experienced this year had to happen 20 years ago, people would pack up their fax machines and and stamps and I don't know. It would probably a lot of more businesses would have just died.
That's such a good point. And I think that many of us are probably relieved that we had to have this lockdown in 2020. If you go back in time, there wouldn't have been a better time than right now. Maybe in the future when we've discovered even more ways of connecting. But we would have been screwed. There would have been no way out of that problem in the year 1999 or 2005. We would have been absolutely screwed. Most people didn't even have connections that would be able to support video conferencing. I remember when it first came out, it was something that only the biggest corporations could afford, right, Jaco? They had these massive screens and they had these incredible server rooms full of machines connecting to all over the place. And those are the only guys who could do video conferencing. Now everyone on earth is doing it almost on a daily basis and more than once a day.
100%. And I think look to some degree, the availability of technology also can be confusing to especially in small enterprise where we play, because there's so many alternatives and options and stuff like that. And that's part of the reason why I say, we have a journey and with our customers, and we have to take them along the road to make sense of the technology and simplicate it, which is one of our key philosophies, is we like to simplicate. We make things easier. We like to simplicate. That's one of our key values is don't overcomplicate it, simplicate it. So so that's part of the road that we have to walk with our customers. But I was actually remarking on Friday to one of our teams here, we've got a customer in Mosselbaai, and they sell insurance and all that type of stuff, but it's old school. And during level 5 of lockdown, so we were pushing them along for years. And then beginning of the year, they took one of our cloud PBX solutions. And then during lockdown, I was speaking to Eunice and Morsel Bar, and he just said to me, he said, this is wonderful. He says, if it wasn't for this, his business would be broken. And you know, they, everybody just went home and they kept on working. And he said to me, he didn't understand or believe that the technology could be such an enabler for their business. So it's like you say, the big corporates, they're so used to it. It's almost like they don't appreciate it. For us, you know, in that small to medium enterprise, when you're a customer like that, say, you know, you guys, the story that really make it worthwhile and happiness, you know.
So Jaco, just quickly, as we remarked earlier on the fact that people are the most important part of this equation, but a lot of internet service companies, like any other service business, and I mean, we don't use that word because it's pretty. We use it because that's actually what you guys do. When it comes to people needing help, a lot of the people who, and we'll talk in a moment about whether it's business to business solutions or whether you actually help people in their houses and that kind of thing. But a lot of us don't know how to diagnose the problem. And sometimes we don't speak the technical geek language that we need to, right? And you've got to have guys there, and I'm sure your teams are really well versed in how to deal with people, but they also need to be able to speak like normal stuff to normal people who don't understand the technical aspects of these things.
So you just remarked one of my pet hates. Now, I hate it when I hear my people speak technical to our customers because it's unnecessary. You know, ultimately it's a piece of string that we have to make work and, you know, like I said earlier, the customer, we don't need to go into the technical details. It's irrelevant to the end customer. And in fact, I think that's almost like, you know, it becomes a carrot. You might remember there was a magician on SABC called Martino and used to go kill your year and kill your daughter and see that. So sometimes, you know, we like to, I always say to the younger guys, yeah, they like to think they Tom Cruise with a helmet under the arm, walking to the airplane, and everybody must have everything ready for them. So we don't, I hate it when we do that because it's unnecessary. And that becomes part of the story that we tell our customers and the journey that we take them on. A lot of the technology that we make available now, we actually give the customer plain, straight, simple visibility. So in other words, it doesn't become an IT function. Anybody at a ownership level or a management level should be able to see what's going on. And it's to do with making sure that whatever we put on the table for the customer is redundant in such a way that if one thing breaks, that the other portion of it just kicks in and it can just work. And it's difficult because, you know, a lot of the times and specifically in a very competitive environment, a commoditized environment, and customers will say, yeah, but you know, this guy is so much cheaper and this and that. And we have to do the work to say to them, but you've got to calculate and work out how much it's going to cost you when your business is not functioning. It's one thing to say it's wonderful, we're online now and the new normal and all that type of stuff. But what does it cost to have an employee? So we actually worked it out. You know, if you're paying somebody 10,000 rand a month salary, they cost you 1.25 rand a minute. So that's sort of the business view in which we look at it for a customer instead of technology. For me to come and sit and say, oh, it's this kind of fiber and that kind of this and all that type of stuff, it's irrelevant. At the end of the day, every single one of us have a business to run, and we've got to put it into a rand and cents type scenario. And that's why you know, I'm saying I'm not 100% convinced that corporate South Africa knows what that new normal looks like, because if you have 100 or 200 or 400 or 1,000 or 8,000 employees sitting at home and there's load shedding for 4 hours, yeah, the cost to that business is astronomical, you know. Huge. So it might just end up justifying having a head office cost again, you know. You don't know.
Sure. And I also think that so many of these companies, they don't really pay any attention to the interface with the customer. It's more about just solving the technical problem. And while that's important, people also need to be listened to, you know. So do you deal with businesses or do you also deal with individuals? You mentioned that clients of yours in Mossel Bay.
Yeah, so we deal primarily in the business space. So we service enterprise or corporate customers or business customers. And we play really, really well is in the medium to small enterprise, if I can call it that. So I'd say anything between 5 to 150 seats is where we play really, really well. The really big corporates like the Standard Banks of the world and all that type of stuff is not really our customer base. We like to deal with customers that still can learn and appreciate the technology that we can make available to them.
Well, it's so ironic that we spoke to Jaco this morning on a morning where I've had interminable internet issues. As I said to him, it's always funny, like you have 300 great days and then the 301st day is a disaster. But this just proves the point. You need to really have someone who's able to help you deal with these things and figure out the problem for you and help you discover what the solution might be. And sometimes you're just not capable of doing that yourself. That's what I realize sometimes. So let's just talk about your podcast quickly, Jaco, because that starts in October. And I'm interested in what you guys are going to be doing with this podcast.
So Gareth, our podcast is called Unbundled, and it's obviously early stages. Mm-hmm. I think some of it we wanna use to just tee up and explain to businesses out there that the technology is not that difficult, and you know, you need to work with a partner that's got a sort of a holistic view and a clear path in terms of how to get there, and that's not just trying to sell you a specific product. And then I think as we progress and as we go along, we will get some technology experts in to come and share with customers or businesses out there what are the solutions that's available out there in the market. And then also I think you know, involve some of our own team. Mm-hmm. To share some of our philosophies in terms of, you know, how we view things. And then, more importantly, you know, getting some of our customers to come and share and just talk around what are the general business problems that people have when it comes to technology and this digital transformation world that we find ourselves in. And you know, how it can be solved. So I think, we view it as a long-term thing and we're gonna try and make it as real as we can so that people know, you know, what are the general, you know, business problems that people have when it comes to technology and how easy it is to be potentially to solve it.
Yeah, I'm very glad. So we'll get to meet your team.
Jaco,
as well.
if you're ever strapped for cash, you can get content directly from Leanne Moll.
Hey.
Yeah, he's not lying.
Yeah. All right, so Jaco, thank
There's
you.
There's always okay, well, a thing we... that isn't working or something or the other.
Yeah. In fact, you don't want Leanne as a client because most of the time she'll just she'll be phoning up your team, keeping them busy with absolute nonsense. So, Jaco, thank you for introducing us to yourself and to your team. And I know that we'll get to know you guys a lot better through the course of this series. And I would suggest that that if you haven't taken a listen to some of our series that we're doing, particularly a branded series like this with Catalytic, that these are really a place where you can learn not only about how the industry works, you can also meet the people in the business, and that'll help you to figure out for yourself whether or not these are the guys to help you deal with all of your technical issues, to deal with all your solutions that you need implemented in your company. And Jaco and his team really are excellent people. I've met them a couple of times. They even came to our offices the other day. Now, who's going to offices at the moment? So this just proves... And I love it. It just proves how things are changing back to a kind of normal, but I think we'll still all be working from home for much of the time. And for many businesses, if you don't have these things in place right now, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. As Jaco said, can you imagine if this lockdown had happened 10 years ago? We would have been totally in a mess. So Jaco, very nice to see you. And that's Jaco Voigt, who's the CEO of Catalytic. You can find out more by going to cliffcentral.com. We'll be launching that series soon. And it's actually featuring all of the people on his team. So you'll get to meet people in Catalytic, and maybe they're the guys who can help you solve all of your technical issues. Like, I need mine solved here at home. All right, guys, thanks very much. Very, very nice.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Cool, Jaco. We'll speak to you soon again. Isn't that cool?
I'll speak to your team later so we can sort your stuff out at home.
Yeah, We've managed, but then suddenly on the day that we have you on, ironically, it starts becoming a problem. But thanks very much. Okay, cool.
It's written in the stars, Gareth. It's written in the stars.
It's almost like you manifested this. Cheers, Yuck. He's just moved his hands like he's casting a spell. It's hilarious. All right.
Okay, cool.
How's the week looking, Leanne Moll? What are you up to this week?
Just getting back into work stuff, which is nice. Still trying to find a tenant for my cottage.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. Nothing very interesting to report.
Sounds like the most boring week of all time. Really? Like in the Leanne Moll world, usually there are 10,000 dramas happening at once. So let's just count our blessings then, Ass.
Exactly.
We don't want drama for you. We'll just say, well, let's hope there isn't any. And Sia, you got anything interesting on the agenda?
Just some work stuff.
Oh God, you as well. So in other words, Sia and Leanne, Sia and Leanne are both having the most boring week of their lives this week, but at least Sia's back in Joburg and not in Durban anymore. And we will be recording a new episode of So What Now this afternoon. So we'll let you know what's going to be happening this Wednesday. Very exciting things going on there. A big guest today. That's all I can tell you. Big, tremendous guest.
Oh,
this guest is huge. So stand by, as Donald Trump himself would say, because that's coming up on Wednesday evening. Lots of interesting things. All right. Have a good day. We will catch up with you tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock, hopefully with less issues. And we'll be joined by Pumi and Mbulelo, among others. So we'll see you tomorrow, 6 a.m. bright and early. It is 8 o'clock, cliffcentral.com on the 5th of October.
Cliffcentral.com.